And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Well, I need to start off this morning with showing some praise to the young folks over at UNCW, particularly the Turning Point USA chapter. That, of course, the organization that Charlie Kirk started back at this point over a decade ago, as well as the College Republicans for holding an incredibly well-attended candlelight vigil for Charlie Kirk last night. Here's one of the photos that I took showing a massive crowd. There had to have been, best guess, between 1,500 and 2,000 people at this vigil that took place last night over at the college campus on UNCW. And you can see the extent of the crowd, hearing from individuals within the Turning Point USA system, a regional director also there, speaking about the importance of Turning Point USA, speaking to the importance of the work that Charlie Kirk and so many others within that organization have done. And I'll tell you this, I was shocked and surprised with how many young folks were actually there. Now, yes, you probably saying to yourself, well, Nick, Turning Point USA was, predominantly college and youth organization. And yes, I understand that premise. I'm not surprised that young people are involved. I'm surprised how many young people were actually in attendance at an event like this. Was not expecting that to be the case. I was expecting a lot of it to be, people 30 plus being there, but there was hundreds of either in college or college age students that were at the event yesterday. And I think that really goes to show you, and this has been well documented over the last couple of days since the tragedy unfolded almost a week ago, but it is amazing how many folks are now maybe not, and maybe some of these individuals were not involved in these groups before. Maybe they were a passerby of Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA. Maybe they followed him on Instagram or followed him on TikTok or, seen his videos from time to time, but weren't necessarily involved. And so the question is, and I was talking to some folks last night, great group of individuals that were at the event last night. And my hope coming out of this tragic situation, which there's no other way to describe it but tragic, is that the individuals that were there last night, predominantly the college age and younger individuals, take the next step and get involved, whether that be with Turning Point USA, whether that be with any other political organization that fights for freedom, that fights for the ability to speak your mind freely on very divisive, very controversial issues like the witch that Charlie Kirk spoke on each and every day, whether he was doing his nationally syndicated radio show or podcast, whether he was traveling and doing one of his hundreds of stops that he's done on college campuses. I'm hopeful that individuals, the likes of which that I saw last night at UNCW, I'm hopeful that they will get activated and get involved. And one of the things with Charlie Kirk and his movement and his organization was there was a lot of action behind it. It wasn't just posting on social media. It wasn't just being private in your ideals or keeping to yourself. No, it was, yes, having those strong opinions and going out there and doing something about it. I mean, in this last presidential election, the one that just happened this past November, the activation of Turning Point USA and their hundreds of thousands of volunteers absolutely swayed the election towards President Donald Trump. Now, some argue, some don't, that was the no pun intended, the turning point of the election, that it pulled Donald Trump over the finish line. There's no way to know that for certain, but there's no argument that it didn't have a massive impact. And I'm hopeful in Charlie's passing that more and more individuals will get involved. More and more individuals will begin to take part in what is going on with their government, and not just the federal government either. And one of the things that, and of course, over the last week or so, have not been focusing a lot on local politics and local government, even though there's been a lot going on, it's just unfortunately been superseded by this these big national stories. What that would be one of the things that I would hope comes of this is that more and more folks are encouraged to get involved. And again, yes, the national stuff is important, absolutely. But where you can really have an impact, where a couple of dozen votes can literally change the results of an election, that happens locally. You can have a major impact. And this is not just to younger individuals getting involved. I make the same plea to each and every one of you this morning that is listening or watching, whether you're doing it live or after the fact via podcast. The level of involvement, particularly on the more conservative side of the aisle, is unfortunately always been historically low. People talk a big game. People, you know, claim that they're set in their political stance, they're set in their ideology, and unfortunately very few actually do anything about it. And I get it. Not everybody's got time to spend hours a week volunteering with a, you know, political party. Not everybody's got hours a week to spend. That's fine. I get that. Not everybody's got time. But you've got some skill. You've got some area of expertise that you can bring to the equation to help shape not only the national discussion and national issues, but what's going on in your backyard. Whether that be the new Hanover County Board of Commissioners. Hell, we got a Wilmington City Council election coming up here in like less than 2 months. I mean, a very, very short runway for that election. And so I was very encouraged. Originally, I wasn't intending on going to this last night. I'm glad that I talked to some folks yesterday afternoon that encouraged me to do so. It was a phenomenal experience. It was great to see the active engagement from individuals. And for the most part, apparently at the end, I hung around for maybe 20 minutes or so after it ended. Apparently some leftist protester got up after the crowd, of course, had already, you know, dwindled in size, was yelling about Palestine. No real surprise there. These people are mentally ill and deranged. Apparently there is some vile comments on Facebook about it. Again, no surprise there. This is the left. And if you didn't listen to yesterday's show, I would encourage you to listen to it and share it around. The title of yesterday's show was "We're Not the Same," and we're not. And really, when you see some of the and I'm not going to shed any more light onto it. I'm not going to use my platform, my time, and my audience to show people making absurdly stupid comments on social media. I'm just not going to do it. But it exists. You've seen it all over the place. You may have seen it from people that you thought were good, decent people, only to find out that they're actively cheering on the death of somebody that they may have had some political disagreements with. Some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. It says the UNCW kids have been holding vigil all night at the Spirit Rock, which has been painted in honor of Charlie Kirk. The comment goes on to say radicals have been threatening them all night with their intentions to push over that memorial, which has been painted, and apparently campus security is doing nothing. So we'll keep an eye on that as we'll see if anything turns not violent, but if anything turns awry. And you know, it's so ironic, folks, and it's so funny in a really dark sense as to what college campuses have become. I mean, you go back to, you know, the Vietnam War era, and you look at what college campuses were, really a hotbed of individuals speaking against a major U.S. conflict that was going on. And it was applauded at the time, not necessarily because of the stance, but because of the ability for those individuals to, and again, I'm not saying I agree with what they were saying, but the ability for them to do that and the college campus really becoming this bastion of free speech in what was a very tense political issue at the time, like Vietnam. And to see where colleges are now, these so-called institutions of higher learning, to see where these places are now is, there's no other word to describe it, but despicable. There's no other word to describe it. I mean, if you're a, flash, hop back in the time machine a year, if you're a Jew on a college campus in New York City, you're being chased around by pro-Palestinian rioters. That was a year, 12 months ago, that was happening on college campuses in the United States of America. If you're a Jewish student, you have to worry about potentially being assaulted by individuals who are running around screaming about freeing Palestine. That was in the United States of America circa less than 12 months ago. That's what college campuses have turned into. Of course, the shot that killed Charlie Kirk happened at a college campus back last Wednesday. And while, at least from what I've seen, most of these campus vigils that have been happening across the country, for the most part, they've been, no other way to describe them as peaceful. There have not been any individuals that are willing to disrupt it. And it makes sense. Again, I mean, I'll pull back up this picture. You can, you know, zooming in, you can see the extent of the crowd. By the way, there's a whole bunch of people behind me to the left and right of me that are not in this picture. So, you can just see the size and scope of this crowd yesterday over at UNCW. And it's no surprise that these sissy liberals, these cowards on the left, aren't going to make a scene when the group is this size. They're cowards. There's a couple of other words I would love to use to describe them, but I won't. I don't believe it would be appropriate for me to say those words this morning. But I think you know exactly the word that is on the tip of my tongue to describe these individuals. They're social warriors. They've been emboldened by social media to believe that they can, you know, make these kind of ridiculously absurd comments about their political opposition getting gunned down. And they can do that on social media. They can do that on TikTok. They can do that from the freedom of their college dorm room. But when you are faced with a crowd of 1,500 or 2,000 people, all who are peaceful, all who were proclaiming the name of Jesus Christ last night in prayer, in unison, these cowards, they frankly, folks, they don't have the balls to show up and do anything. They don't. Easy to post on Facebook that Charlie Kirk was a douchebag and a scumbag. Right? Easy to do that. It's a lot harder to show up in front of 2,000 people and proclaim that same thing. Real easy to be a keyboard warrior. Real easy to sit behind anonymous profiles online and post that stuff. Completely different ball game when you have to face 2,000 people who weren't there. The people in that crowd, they weren't agitated. They weren't, you know, they were upset. They were, of course, frustrated with the situation that unfolded last Wednesday at Utah Valley University. But this, there was nothing violence in this. There was nothing violent in this crowd. There was no unrest in this crowd. And it's why yesterday's show was titled, "We Are Not the Same." Because when you see some of these icons on the left, right, every single time that they've got an individual that they can latch onto for police brutality, what these events don't exist. They're the left's equivalent to the candlelight vigils that are happening for Charlie Kirk are burning your local city to the ground. That is their equivalent to a candlelight vigil. Roaming through the streets, attacking local law enforcement, looting small businesses, and burning them to the ground. That is their equivalent to candlelight vigils. We are not the same group. We are not the same people. We may live in the same country. We may take the same human form. We're not the same people, folks. We're not. You can look at everything that has happened over the last 5 or 10 years with any sort of civil unrest that has gone on in this country, and it is blatantly obvious that we are not the same group. that we do not have the same things on our minds, that we do not handle ourselves in the same manner. And this, you know, parlays into an interesting discussion that has been growing on the left, this whataboutism, and that's nothing new. The political left, the Democrat Party, all they've got is whataboutism. And so you've seen over the last couple of days now, well, what about the people in Minnesota? What about this situation? You know, of course, they leave out like a what about Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, whose house was firebombed, not by a MAGA supporter, not by a radical right-wing extremist that was turned radical by Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA. No, that was at the hands of a radical Democrat, a pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian organization and group that firebombed the Democrat governor's house of Pennsylvania. So no real whataboutism there because it doesn't fit their narrative. But whataboutism with Minnesota and any other sort of act of political violence that has ever existed in U.S. history. And it's very clear and obvious why this is the approach that is being taken by those on the left. They know, I think most of them know deep down, not all of them, but I think most of them know that the words that they have spewed for the last decade are having an impact. They don't want to face that reality. They don't want to have to come to the realization, not that words are violence, that's a stupid term, but they don't want to come to the reality that when they demonize individuals, dehumanize them for the better part of a decade, that people believe that it is okay to commit these atrocious acts. They don't want to have to deal with that at all. So now they just want to play, well, what about this situation? What about that situation? As if somehow that justifies the political assassination of Charlie Kirk. Greg Gutfeld, who I have loved watching for years, was on, as he is almost every single weeknight, on The Five last night on Fox News. And Jessica Tarlov, who is the token Democrat on that panel, has not been on the show since Charlie Kirk's assassination. I don't know if she was on vacation or whatnot, but she has not been on the show since then. So last night, Monday night, was the first time she has been on since Wednesday. And she immediately fell into this same trap of, well, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? And Greg Gutfeld absolutely nuked her on national television. I will warn you, I need to get better with doing this. There is some small level of profanity in this, no F-bombs or anything like that, but there is a little bit of profanity in this about 4-minute clip from Greg Gutfeld. Typically don't play clips that long from back and forth on news outlets, play interviews and things like that. But this is an incredibly well-stated clip. Greg Gutfeld lays this out better than anybody I have seen, and to me, really encompasses what I talked about yesterday on the show. So here is Greg Gutfeld, Jessica Tarlov, and the group on The Five yesterday. If you haven't seen this clip, it is absolutely phenomenal.
Yes, we don't need it. What is interesting here is, why is only this happening on the left and not the right? That's all we need to know.
What about
there's
Stoker?
Absolutely no cognitive.
What about Melissa Horstman that we just talked about?
You want to talk about Melissa Horstman? Did you know her name before it happened? None of us did. None of us were spending every single day talking about Mrs. Horstman. I never heard of her until after she died.
So she doesn't matter?
Don't play that bullshit with me. You know what I'm saying is there was no demonization amplification about that woman before she died. It was a specific crime against her by somebody who knew her. The same, and now you could bring up Josh Shapiro, but then you will not bring up, for example, that was a pro-Palestine person. So don't use your, what about this? The fact of the matter is the both sides argument not only doesn't fly, we don't care. We don't care about your both sides argument. That shit is dead. For one thing, there is no cognitive dissonance on our side. On your side, your beliefs do not match reality. So you're coming up with these rationalizations like, what about this? Or what about that? We're not doing that because we saw it happen. We saw a young, bright man assassinated, and we know who did it. We are not coming up with rationalizations. We are calm, we are honest, and we are resolute. We're not defensive, and I understand the defensiveness. I understand why people are saying, what about this and what about this? Because if you have to face the underlying fact to this, your life is going to fall apart because you're going to realize you're not the good guys. If you sat around and you defended the mutilation of children, you're not the good guys. If you sat 600, 700 cases of harassment against Republicans and you said, but what about this? What about this? And then you see this murder after calling somebody a fascist, you realize maybe I'm not the good guy. That is a hell of a realization to deal with. So therefore, you have to grasp at rationalizations. You don't have to do that, Jessica. They do. I don't believe you're part of that group, but why the hell do you have to mimic and echo that crap to us? He was a patsy. That guy was a patsy. He was under the hypnotic spell of a direct-to-consumer nihilism, the trans cult, and you know that. If you can decide that biology is false, you can agree that murder is okay and that humanity is expendable. How you cannot see that alone and see that for what the evil it is without having to attach all of these other things is beyond me.
I just want to be clear and I want to let people speak. I in no way intended at all to minimize what happened to Charlie. I was horrified by it. I have not been on the five
since then.
But the
two sides argument, it's like pig Latin to a duck.
No. All that I was saying is could we have all of the information before you just say they did this? Because that is a broad brush to paint with this. And this kid
does
seem...
Let's have a conversation.
No.
Charlie had a conversation. He got shot.
I'm sorry, Jessica.
You weren't here for a week. You came in here and it's cold. And I'm sorry, but this is a story that is immune to news cycles. It's immune to rationalizations. It's immune to bias. This thing is with us for good. And we all have to deal with that. So that means we can't live by the same arguments that you might be reading about relativism among the media. We can't deal with those stories. It doesn't matter. The media is dead to us on the story. They built this thing up. We're dealing with it. We're going to act. We don't care what the whataboutism is anymore. That shit's dead. Sorry. For the swearing as well. I apologize to the American public. I'm going to shut up for the rest of the show.
Bravo, Greg Gutfeld. Absolutely nuking Jessica Tarlov on The Five yesterday afternoon. And what he says is absolutely correct. And it's what you've heard me talk about over the last couple of days. It's this immediate jump to, well, what about these killers and what about these politicians that died in Minnesota? It's immediate whataboutism. And as Greg Gutfeld noted, the horrific killing of those Minnesota lawmakers, it is not minimized at all. But these were not public figures and icons that everybody knew about. That was a targeted attack that was done in that state. Charlie Kirk was a nationally known icon. It is a completely different circumstance. And the left wants to take no responsibility for their actions. The left wants to take no responsibility for their rhetoric at all. And they just want to say, well, what about political violence on the right? Like what? You're going to point to one or two situations to justify political violence on the right? And with those one or two examples, you admonish everything that has been said and has been acted on by the left? With those examples, you are allowed to erase everything that has happened over the last 10 years? How the hell do you justify that to yourself? It is amazing that the mental gymnastics that these folks on the left have to go through to justify how they are not one of the parties responsible for the rising political tension in our country. The way that they can justify how they have absolutely no responsibility at all in this case is absurd. Yesterday morning, I played like a 4-minute clip of media head after talking head talking about how Donald Trump and the Republicans are Nazis and fascists and racists and bigots and threats to democracy and existential threats to the future of our country, so on and so forth. And they believe that they can just wipe the slate clean on that now? Greg Gutfeld ended that very well by saying, the media is dead to us. Their coverage of this stuff is dead to us. We don't care. And that's, I think, an approach and a stance that many more folks on our side need to take. We don't care what your coverage is anymore. We don't care about the whataboutism. We don't care about your freaking joint statements and your gaslighting and your pandering of, oh, we don't condone political violence. We don't condone the violent actions taken out against Charlie Kirk. We don't care. Your party is solely responsible, and I make that very clear, solely responsible for the rising tension that exists in politics in America. Now, of course, the left will say, it's not our fault. It's Donald Trump's fault. We have to call him out because he's a threat to our existence. He's a threat to our democracy. We have no choice but to call him out. That's what the left will do. But there's only one side that calls their political opposition a literal threat to the existence of the United States of America. Republicans and conservatives, myself included, are critical of Democrats. Unlike others, I have no problem calling them out on their bullshit. I have no problem being incredibly critical of them, their policies, their stances, and who they are. You can be critical without dehumanizing. You can be critical without using words like Nazi, fascist, authoritarian, racist, bigot, and the list goes on and on. I could sit here for the next 4 hours and list out every terrible, awful name that has been thrown at you, your friends, your family, the president of the United States, and everybody that has supported him over the last decade. Some folks on the left are now clamoring to make the argument that, oh, well, we're not allowed to, Trump is saying, and Republicans are saying, we're not allowed to criticize them now. No, literally nobody is saying that. I have heard not a single person make the argument that Democrats are no longer allowed to be critical of the right. I've not heard, there's literally nobody that has made that point. We are making a very simple observation. And it's, again, you don't have to look far and wide. This stuff is not isolated to fringe elements of the radical left. Prior to Wednesday, you could turn on any major nightly news program, whether that's the 6:30 news on NBC, CBS, ABC. Any point throughout the day, you could flip on MSNBC or CNN, and you could see this kind of rhetoric on full display. You could see these words, you could see these talking points flat out. It's not a fringe element anymore, folks. It is mainstream. It is being echoed by every single major publication on the left, which is, by the way, 99% of the freaking media. They own every newspaper in the country. They own every single television network outside of Fox News, Newsmax, and OAN. Everything else is exclusively owned, operated, and controlled by the left. They own all of these platforms. And in unison, they all say the same thing. And now that an individual, yet again, it's not the first time this has happened. Go back to July of last year, the attempt on President Donald Trump's life. But once again, you've got a deranged lunatic on the left. You've got a deranged individual that has fallen into the tailspin, which is believing the kind of rhetoric that is said about Donald Trump and Republicans, you and me, our families, that because we support having a safe border, because we are not in favor of millions of people, this is how simple the discussion is. Because I don't support millions of people coming into the United States unchecked, I am by default a racist. That's not a fringe discussion that happens on the left. That is exactly what is said. Because I want a strong and prosperous nation, I am a bigot. Because I don't believe it's okay for lawless criminals to wreak havoc and hell on American cities across the United States, I am a fascist. I am an authoritarian. I am a Nazi for those stances. These are the real discussions that are happening on these left-wing television news outlets. These are the kinds of opinion pieces and editorial board pieces that are being penned by groups like the Washington Post. I mean, just look at the Washington Post headline. Not the headline of a specific article, but the banner right on their homepage. What is the tagline on the Washington Post? Does anybody know? It's "Democracy Dies in Darkness." What kind of headline is that? Democracy dies. Dies. The end. The end. I mean, Charlie Kirk died. He's no longer alive. He will never be alive again. Dies a pretty strong word. When somebody dies, it's not a good thing. Democracy dies in darkness. That's the motto of the Washington Post. So when they continue this kind of rhetoric, when they allow these conversations to continue unchecked, which is exactly what they've done, they have allowed all of their reporters, all of their analysts, all of their guests, all of their contributors, all of their talking heads to come on their news outlets, to be quoted in their newspapers, to be recorded in their radio reports for 10 years, repeating these same ridiculous phrases and terms over and over and over and over again. And then when somebody acts on that, when somebody who is mentally deranged says, well, Charlie Kirk is a Nazi. We don't like Nazis. We should kill Nazis. Somebody acts on that, shoots him in the neck in front of 3,000 people at Utah Valley University almost a week ago. Kills him in front of his wife and one-year-old daughter and 3,000 other people. The left goes, oh, well, what about those two lawmakers in Minnesota? I mean, just literally no ability to have any self-reflection on the things that they have said, the rhetoric that they have spewed, and the way in which they have radicalized a portion of the United States, completely radicalized them into believing that their political opposition not only are bad people, right? That's one thing. Not only that their ideas are dangerous, but they are akin to some of the worst people and worst movements that have ever existed in American history that have led to the death of millions of people. But they don't want to have to accept any responsibility for that. They don't want to claim or have to own the things that they have said. The yes, in fact, dangerous rhetoric that they have spewed. Folks, this is nothing new. If you've been following me for any period of time, I've been talking about this ad nauseum for 5 years now. The way the left stages things and the way that they frame political discourse in America is not beneficial to the country. I might argue it's not even beneficial to their own party. Case in point, last November's election, where Democrats got absolutely blown out electorally in almost every single election, from the White House to races in the House and Senate, all over the place. All of it coming off of 8 years of, or 9 years of, oh my God, every single Republican is a threat to the existence, the future existence of our country. Yet, 70 plus million people supported Donald Trump, gave Republicans the majority in the Senate, allowed them to continue to host, albeit a slim, but continue to have a slim majority in the House. So you've already seen how the American voters, and I would argue at least a majority, not a huge majority, but a simple majority of the American public has already moved away from this kind of rhetoric. They have already moved away from this kind of ridiculous gaslighting and political framing of their opposition. And they've said, no, to hell with you. We're not going to listen to it. Not only do we know it's not true, we know it's dangerous. And so for everybody, all of these Democrat groups and all of these Democrat politicians running to microphones and running to their social media intern, their 19-year-old college student, to write up a quick statement to publish on X, write up a quick statement to post on social media. We don't care. I don't want to see your statements. I don't want to listen to your, oh, we have solidarity for Charlie Kirk's family. Bullshit. You demonized him and everybody that supported him for a decade. You don't have solidarity with his family. You don't stand up against political violence. You actively wish it on. We are not the same. Again, if you haven't already listened to it, I'd highly encourage you to check out yesterday's, the Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show, where I walk through this in greater detail and pointing out the gaping difference between those on the political left and those on the political right. So this case, it's about a week old or so. Well, last Wednesday is when Charlie Kirk was shot. Friday morning, we learned that a shooter was taken into custody. And that case now transitions this morning from, you know, this, of course, public square discussion that's going on into a legal discussion, as it will transition into the courtroom. I'll have some additional details on that coming up here in just a few minutes. But before that, I want to tell you about the great folks over at The Law Group. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in Melissa Gott and her team over at The Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit their great website, lawgroupnc.com, where you can read about all of their attorneys, look at the areas of practice in which they excel and have expertise in, and a great blog that discusses a wide variety of legal issues. All of that available over at their website, lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call this morning, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate The Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We'll continue. We've got the timeline on what is expected to go on in court today as the killer, Tyler Robinson of Charlie Kirk, will make his first court appearance in Utah later on today. Those details coming up as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this Tuesday morning, streaming live 7 a.m. Eastern, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and of course 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget that you can support the show and get access to bonus content, including a daily show notes and more. All of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. That gets you access, again, to those daily show notes, all of the various clips and news topics and articles that we talk about here weekday mornings, all of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks to the great folks that support over there and keep the program on the air. All right, so transitioning now to what we're expecting to learn a little bit later on today as Tyler Robinson, the 22-year-old radicalized individual who at this point law enforcement believe acted alone, at least that's what they're saying publicly, in the assassination of Charlie Kirk last Wednesday in Utah. He is expected to make his way to court today, and that is what we are tracking. Now, I do know that this first appearance is going to be happening virtually, so he's not going to be hauled into a courtroom. It will happen over Zoom or some other sort of video chat coming up a little bit later on today. And the question really is going to be, what exactly are the charges that they go after Tyler Robinson with? Now, obviously, right off the bat, murder is the first thing that jumps to your mind, and he will, no question about it, be charged with murder. The question is, what other sort of charges should we anticipate? We don't really know as of right now. I will note, and this has been brought forth by the Utah governor in Spencer Cox, Utah is one of the 21 states that allows capital punishment, right? The death penalty is alive and well in Utah. There's also questions whether the federal government will step in. We spent a lot of time last week talking about Irina Zaruska's gruesome murder here in Charlotte, North Carolina. The federal government has stepped in on that case. Now, they're using federal statutes that deal with committing acts of violence on mass transit, so they've got federal code dealing with that. But from everything that I've been, you know, kind of keeping an eye on over the last couple of days, at least it seems as of right now that there are not going to be federal charges in this case. Now, that could change, but as of right now, it looks like it will be prosecuted as solely a state issue. And of course, a lot of this is going to come around evidence. We know that there's a gun that was taken in by law enforcement. We know that there are bullet casings that had things etched on them like, "Hey, fascist, catch." And one of the things that was broken yesterday in the news was chat logs from Discord, which is a very popular online chat room system that folks predominantly in the video game space originally used. It's now used for a wide variety of services. Folks use it even for their internal corporate chats as well. And it's being reported, actually, surprisingly enough, this is the Washington Post that had this exclusive yesterday, that chat logs indicate that Tyler Robinson admitted to his fellow Discord buddies that he was the one that pulled the trigger. This is reading directly from the article yesterday. This is a alleged quote from Tyler Robinson. Quote, "Hey guys, I have bad news for you all. It was me at UVU yesterday. I'm sorry for all of this." That's what the Washington Post is claiming was a direct post on Discord, which is, you know, in some cases, not necessarily a public chat room, but it's not by any stretch of the imagination private. That message was apparently sent Thursday night, about 2 hours before Tyler Robinson's father and others turned him in to officials in the state of Utah, and they conducted that arrest around 10 p.m. local time last Thursday. A member of the group chat shared an image of the conversation with the Washington Post and confirmed that it came from Robinson's account. The person spoke on a condition of anonymity out of fear of harassment. Discord provided a copy of the message with confessions to authorities, according to a person familiar with the company's interaction with law enforcement. That person also spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to, of course, speak on behalf of their employer. The message was sent from Robinson's account to a small private group of online friends, the person noted, as Discord is working closely with the FBI and local authorities, providing information about Robinson's online activities on the platform and presumably some of his other social media platforms, some of his other social media posts as well. And Kash Patel, the director of the FBI, was on Fox News last night with Sean Hannity on the Sean Hannity television show, a big exclusive interview for Sean Hannity last night, and talked about some of this evidence, talked about some of these messages and how some of this might play out as, again, this situation does shift from a position of kind of public discourse, public conversation, to one that will play out in the judicial system in the state of Utah. Here's just a little bit of Kash Patel on the Sean Hannity show last night.
Is there an investigation into a wider plot?
Sean, thanks so much for having me. And because President Trump and the Attorney General have prioritized resources to this this all-important investigation. We're dedicating every asset we have to run the reverse daisy chain analysis of anyone that was in contact with a suspect that's currently in custody and anyone he contacted, called, and text messaged and had chats on online social media platforms with. That's the power of the FBI. That's the resources we brought in immediately with our cell phone analytic team to use the cell phone tower data dump system to geolocate specifically where this cell phone was and who had it, and after that, who he was talking to. And Sean, let me tell you a little bit about the information we've collected. We've collected information where, through witness interviews from the FBI and local law enforcement, that he essentially admitted after the shooting and assassination of Charlie Kirk, the suspect admitted to it. Furthermore, the evidence and information will come out. I won't stylize the evidence. The attorney general is absolutely right. We can't do that. But I will say what was found in terms of information, a text message exchange, where he, the suspect, specifically stated that he had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and he was going to do that. And when he was asked why, he said some hatred cannot be negotiated with.
Wow.
Yeah, you're also running an investigation on what's called the Discord chat room, which has scores of people on it, and texts between the suspect and the partner. Mm-hmm. I assume that those discussions are ongoing?
Absolutely. In order to properly adjudicate this matter and let law enforcement hand off information into evidence for a court of law for prosecution, we have to go out and get search warrants. We have to go out and get search warrants of the identifiers that were then built off of the prior search warrants. And we are doing that. And we are going to be interviewing scores of people on not just these chats on Discord, but any communications that this individual have. We've seized multiple electronic devices from the home of the suspect and his romantic partner. We've got computers. We've got laptops. We've got gaming systems. We've got cell phones. All of that is being triaged by the FBI because that's what we do. And the resources that the Attorney General has dedicated to this mission is allowing us to move at the speed we have. As you said, 33 hours, Sean, this individual is apprehended. And on
Let me ask you, because it 33 hours, and I did mention Luigi Mangione, and I did mention the Sarnor brothers in the Boston bombing, and I did talk about the Centennial Park bomber, Eric Rudolph, and Ted Kaczynski. 33 hours, 2 hours after the video footage was enhanced and released, the suspect's father turned him in. And you got criticized for doing that, and criticized for going out to the crime scene. And I'm having a hard time understanding what people's expectations are.
Sean, my expectation is to deliver to the mission and the resources the men and women the FBI need and to produce. And that's what we did here. When you're talking about things like going out to a crime scene, that's how you investigate that matter properly. And when you're talking about why did it take 33 hours, well, I made the operational decision to immediately release enhanced videos and photographs of the suspect because the operational call that I made for the FBI said, we are about to smoke this guy out and his family and friends and his internal network is going to assist it. And this is the operation I want to highlight in terms of transparency.
And that's exactly what happened. I mean, the FBI released the information, the pictures are released, video surveillance, still shots. And lo and behold, Tyler Robinson's family, after seeing the evidence, seeing the video, seeing the pictures, turns him in. Just 2 hours prior to that, posting in his online Discord chat, hey guys, sorry, it was me. And even before that, Kash Patel reporting, and this has also been reported, this is not necessarily anything new, but also mentioning in that clip that prior to this, he had spoken to that same Discord chat room, had also spoken to family and friends about Charlie Kirk coming to the state of Utah and talking not necessarily about killing him, but talking about how he was coming to Utah and how he was very dissatisfied with what he had heard from Charlie Kirk. And so after the manhunt went on, it did in fact do so. He was turned in by there's conflicting reports on this. It was either his father or a friend of the family. It's not immediately clear. At that point's kind of irrelevant at this point. He's in custody now and will make his first court appearance today. So we'll wait and see what the charges are. Not immediately clear. Obviously, we know he'll be charged with some level of murder. What sort of other charges do the individuals in the state of Utah throw after him? The death penalty, as you're well aware, is on the books. One of 21 states in Utah is one of the 21 states where that is allowed to take place, and it does. And I want to end on this. Just a couple of minutes of J.D. Vance. He hosted the Charlie Kirk radio show in podcast yesterday. This is a much longer clip. I'll have it in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. It's about a 13-minute clip. I'm not going to play anywhere near all of it. But I just did want to play a couple minutes of J.D. Vance. He ended Charlie Kirk's radio show by talking about political violence. Talked about, and you've heard this from President Trump as well, holding the individuals that are responsible, yes, of course, for the heinous action themselves, but the ones that stoke on this fear, the ones that use this kind of rhetoric that causes people to believe that it is okay to assassinate their political opposition. Here's J.D. Vance on the Charlie Kirk Show yesterday afternoon.
Shortly after Usha and I left Charlie's family and Charlie's remains in Arizona, I read a story in The Nation magazine about my dear friend Charlie Kirk. Now, The Nation isn't a fringe blog. It's a well-funded, well-respected magazine whose publishing history goes back to the American Civil War. George Soros's Open Society Foundation funds this magazine, as does the Ford Foundation and many other wealthy titans of the American progressive movement. The writer accuses Charlie of saying, and I quote, "Black women do not have brain processing power to be taken seriously." But if you go and watch the clip, the very clip she links to, you realize he never said anything like that. He never uttered those words. He made an argument against affirmative action as a policy. He criticized a specific Supreme Court justice as an individual. He never said anything about black women as a group. He made an argument for judging people of all races and backgrounds by their own individual merits. The very evidence she provides, this hack of a writer, shows that she lied about a dead man, and yet she wrote it. An esteemed magazine published it. It made it through the editors, and of course, liberal billionaires rewarded that attack. Now, of course, even if Charlie had uttered those words, it wouldn't mean that he deserved his fate. But consider the level of propaganda at work. Charlie was gunned down in broad daylight, and well-funded institutions of the left lied about what he said so as to justify his murder. This is soulless and evil. But I was struck not just by the dishonesty of this smear, but by the glee over a young husband's and young father's death. Quote, she says, "He was an unrepentant racist, transphobe, homophobe, and misogynist." The Nation wrote, who often wrapped his bigotry in Bible verses because there was no other way to pretend that it was morally correct. He had children, as do many vile people. That's what they said. He had children, as do many vile people. Now, hours before this smear was published, my wife and I had the honor of escorting Charlie's body back to his home in Arizona. We took his wife, Erica, we love you, his parents, his sister, and a few of his best friends with us. And as they offloaded Charlie's casket from Air Force Two, I worried that Erica would collapse with grief. Now, I am a very lucky husband to a very wonderful wife, but I have never been prouder of my wife than that moment as she held Erica in Erica's very darkest hour. And I thought of Erica as I read that disgusting attack on Charlie. He had children, as do many vile people. That's what they said about him. I said the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I asked Usha what Erica had said to her earlier in the day in a private moment, and I asked Erica's permission to share this. My wife told me, she asked me for advice. Erica asked me for advice on how she should tell her children that their father had been murdered. She asked my wife how to tell her beautiful kids that their father and my dear, very dear friend is no longer with us. And as she was doing it, there were people dancing on that father's grave. Now, I have heard many calls in the last few days for unity and for healing in the wake of Charlie's assassination. You have no idea how desperately I want that, how gratified I was when Democratic friends and even former Senate colleagues reached out to offer their condolences to me. I'm so thankful. And I know there are so many like them all across our great country. I am desperate to wrap my arms around them as we all unite to condemn political violence and the ideas that cause it. Psalm 133 tells us, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head." Oh, how badly have I craved that precious ointment in recent days, and I believe we can have it. But first, we must tell the truth. It's the only way to honor Charlie, for what was he, if not a man who told the truth in every place, in every environment? Now, the most important truth Charlie told is this, that long ago a man, begotten, not made, came down from heaven, and by the Holy Spirit was incarnate of the Virgin Mary and became man. For our sake, he was crucified under Pontius Pilate and suffered death and was buried and rose again on the third day. Charlie believed, as I do, that all the truth he told flowed from that fundamental principle. I really do believe that we can come together in this country. I believe we must. But unity, real unity, can be found only after climbing the mountain of truth. And there are difficult truths we must confront in our country. One truth is that 24% of self-described, quote, very liberals believe it is acceptable to be happy about the death of a political opponent, while only 3% of self-described very conservatives agree. 3% is too many, of course. Another truth is that 26% of young liberals believe political violence is sometimes justified, and only 7% of young conservatives say the same. Again, too high a number. In a country of 330 million people, you can, of course, find one person of a given political persuasion justifying this or that or almost anything. But the data is clear. People on the left are much likelier to defend and celebrate political violence. This is not a both sides problem. If both sides have a problem, one side has a much bigger and malignant problem, and that is the truth we must be told. That problem has terrible consequences. The leader of our party, Donald J. Trump, escaped an assassin's bullet by less than an inch. Our House Majority Leader, Stephen Scalise, came within seconds of death by an assassin himself. And now, the most influential conservative activist in generations, our friend Charlie, has been murdered. This violence, it doesn't come from nowhere. Now, any political movement, violent or not violent, is a collection of forces. It's like a pyramid that stacks on top, one support on top of the other. That pyramid's got a foundation of donors, of activists, of journalists, now of social media influencers, and of course of politicians. Not every member of that pyramid would commit a murder. In fact, over 99%, I'm sure, would not. But by celebrating that murder, apologizing for it, and emphasizing not Charlie's innocence, but the fact that he said things some didn't like, even to the point of lying about what he actually said, many of these people are creating an environment where things like this are inevitably going to happen.
Amen. That's Vice President J.D. Vance hosting the Charlie Kirk Show yesterday afternoon, talking about the hard truths of the matter. And it parlays very well with the clip we heard earlier from Greg Gutfeld about the whataboutism. Once again, the data, the evidence, the numbers, and what you see publicly does not lie. If you want unity, which is what most people on the left are claiming, then you've got to take a glance in the mirror. You've got to do some level of self-reflection on the way that you demonize people that you have political disagreements with. So we'll watch the court proceedings today. The report from FBI Director Cash Patel a couple of days ago was that Tyler Robinson was not being helpful with the FBI, was not providing them with information. So I'm not sure that we'll hear anything from Robinson in court today, but that hearing is going to happen virtually. We'll bring you the latest details coming up tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Well, that's going to do it for a Tuesday edition. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and of course is available 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. We'll do it again tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.